This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work Policy and Practice at the University of Chicago, where research meets real-world impact. The master's program in social work blends classroom learning with extensive field education guided by faculty known for groundbreaking research. Applications are open at crownschool.uchicago.edu/socialwork. Inspire change. Shape the future. WBEZ's Nonprofit Spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. Stateville Correctional Center is notorious for its hazardous living conditions, visible mold on sanitary drinking water, rodent infestations. The list goes on. Civil rights lawyers argued the conditions are unlivable, and a federal judge ordered Stateville to move out its population by the end of September. Now, we checked in with a panel to learn what this means for prison education. Flor Esquivel is with the Illinois Coalition for Higher Education in Prison. Alice Kim is Director of Practice at the Center for the Study of Race, Politics, and Culture at UChicago. She also facilitates a think tank at Stateville through the Prison and Neighborhood Arts Education Project. And Phyllis West is Director of the Social Justice Initiative at Governors State University. She also teaches at Stateville. I started by asking Flora to catch us up and explain what plans the Illinois Department of Corrections has shared regarding the closure. Here's Flora.
I think that's part of the issue, the transparency issue. So there is communication, and there was communication sent out that students were going to be transferred out by the end of the month. But as you continue to hear from even just educators, there's mixed messages of, students are being moved out already and they're going to be moved out before the end of the month. And so what we're trying to request is that there's additional communication and communication transparency, not just with the coalition and, let's say, myself, but also with the educators that are on the floor providing the day-to-day activities.
We, end of July, walked into class and had a discussion around, we're going to be moved. We knew starting the class the 1st of July, mm-hmm. that we would more than likely be closing, the Stateville would be closing at the end of September, and my class would end September 25th. That didn't happen. End of July, we heard something. 2 weeks ago, I went from 17 people in the class to 6, and they were just literally ripped out of class, didn't know, didn't get to say goodbye or anything.
So you're seeing the classroom change right before your eyes? Essentially.
Yes, people gone. I will never see them. We're trying to figure out how do we end the class. It was a restorative justice class, a circle keeping class, mm-hmm. which is essential to practice and facilitating. And they did facilitate a class on what does this closure mean.
Yeah. Yeah, because abrupt transfers, they can cause a lot of turbulence, right? But both for the people who are behind bars and for you, the educators. So I'm sure, Phyllis, you've developed some close relationships with your students on the inside, through your teaching. So how does all of that make you feel?
I tell you, I've found out through an email that 30 people were removed, and of the 30, 6 of them were already gone from my class, and then another 2 were gone. I cried like a baby. Mm. It was unbelievable. Because of all what was in my head were the stories around the table, the circle, the week before. The week before, these gentlemen said, well, I don't know what that means. Where am I going? All I know is this place. This is the only place I've known. People have died here. This feels like a big burial ground now. What do we do? Mm. And then others were like, well, I'm going to tell you, I'm scared. Because I don't know if I have to go into a fighting zone. Where are we going? What will our lives be about?
Alice, can you take the rest of us there who haven't been, and describe for us what a classroom on the inside feels like and looks like, sounds like even.
Sure, absolutely. I've been teaching at Stateville for over 10 years now, and recently, in the last 2 years, have started teaching a mixed enrollment class. This is a class that brings University of Chicago students into Stateville to have class with students who are earning their bachelor's degrees through the University Without Walls program. This class has been transformative for all of us. You know, we walk into the prison like everyone else who goes into a prison. We are all shaken down at the visitor center. We are only allowed to bring in certain materials. We ask that our students don't bring anything other than a notebook and a pen to write with.
And when you say shaken down, are you talking about a search?
Yes. Okay. We are searched. All the materials we bring in are subject to search. Then we walk, I think maybe it's half a mile. I'm not sure. We walk a long ways to get to our classroom, which is inside an education building. And inside this education building, we have a small classroom with not tables. We wish we had a table. A conference room like setting would be nice, but we sit in chairs that have individual desks on them. And usually we actually put ourselves into a circle. And one of the first things that students noticed when we walked in, that if you look up, there are nails on the ceiling that look like coffins. So they're all about, yes. And we also bring in one bottle of water each, right? And we're allowed that one bottle of water. And in spite of these stark conditions, I think we are able to transform that classroom into an environment where we all are learners and teachers together.
Flora, these abrupt transfers, they're impacting education opportunities, but can you just explain in broad strokes for us the different ways that the incarcerated men are being impacted here?
Of course. And even before that, right? So we're looking at the transfer issue, the abrupt issue, and we're looking at dehumanizing education conditions. And so one of the reasons why the coalition was formed in 2016 was to be able to bring educators and institutions together as a group and be able to advocate against these challenges and issues. And so what does it look like? It looks like an instructor being able to bring in what they need to bring in to educate on the inside. It looks like a student being able to know if they are going to be transferred, where are they going to be transferred in, how is that going to look like. There isn't a comprehensive policy right now, but that's our end goal, making sure that students are able to know where they're going to go, because their family members need to know. The challenge also is, as Stateville is going to be closing, where are they going to go? Most of the prisons are, at least now, aside from Stateville, are 3 to 4 or 5 hours away.
Further away from Chicago.
Yes. When we do these drives, we really, you know, and this is where I commend all of us who provide education on the inside. You really have to, even at times, dehumanize yourself. You know, when you have your bottle of water, the amount of times perhaps that you may even just have to go to the bathroom, right? Because of the restrictions that are set through. And so we're hoping that this challenge really brings in the group together. We're going to be meeting with IDOC at the end of this month to be able to voice the feelings, the emotions. And again, IDOC is in the business for incarceration.
The Department of Corrections.
The Department of Corrections is in the business for incarceration. Our goal is to be able to educate, but to decarcerate. And so this is the first example of a prison closure, and it's impacting because it's impacting close to 1,400 students.
Yeah.
It's impacting because it's impacting most of the programs. Most of our programming is at Stateville, so now what's going to happen?
There's a lot of uncertainty. So Phyllis, I mean, education, it seems like here, it's not just about the degree, right? It's about the community and the sense of possibility that it can create.
It's huge,
right? Talk more about that.
It's their lives. It's literally their lives. It it breathes life into them. Whether they're leaving, someone's leaving in 3 months, 6 months, or a life sentence, it gets them out of their cells. It creates a community, right? It creates civility, a sense of consciousness, as in a reflection of not only I'm willing to serve my time, I deeply want to become a better human being. Mm. I am a better human being. I'm not the person who did this crime.
Tell us more about what you're hearing from them.
I'm hearing from them, especially in like a restorative justice class, right? How do we learn circle keeping, restorative justice to work and do this in prison with our peers? How do we make this place a more civilized place mm-hmm. where no one's harming each other and we are also peacekeeping and problem solving? How do we also do that for our family members?
Yeah.
With our children who are angry that we're away, with our mother and father that we disappointed.
Yeah.
How do we heal and build harm? How do we heal the repair? How do we say I'm sorry to the people we harmed, to the community we harmed? How do we say we're sorry to ourselves?
Hmm. Alice, you also taught a mixed enrollment class at Stateville. This was with students from UChicago, right? So,
that's
so
right.
Was this any different?
I mean, it was transformative in the way that we were able to build community with one another. And I think that because the stakes are higher, right, when you're learning in a prison setting and when you know that people in the class are facing life sentences and are literally fighting for their freedom, mm-hmm. it meant that every single student, every single person who was in that classroom felt accountable to one another. And because of that, I think it elevated what it meant to learn together. And I think that it's that sense of community that has been lost and that we're losing in this moment is something that I think is overlooked. Mm. That over the last 10, 15 years when prison education programs came back in Illinois and were built back up in Illinois, that a community was created at Stateville. And right now, as people, you know, the class that I've been teaching over the summer, it's the think tank. We started with 19 students, the last class down to 7. And I believe we were scheduled to meet on the 19th, but I don't know if any students will be remaining.
Wow.
It's a real loss that people feel because they've developed chosen family with one another, mm-hmm. they've developed community with one another, and now they are being scattered to prisons all over the
state.
Such
a rapid and a stark drop in numbers. You talked earlier, Flora, about location, right, which we know is so important. As we talked about Stateville being so close to Chicago, and it's a city that's got a lot of well-resourced universities nearby. Now with these moves, we don't know where they're going to end up. Are there worries about the educational opportunities that are going to be offered at the new institutions?
Of course. When a student gets transferred, one, they're not aware of where they're going to be transferred until the day of, a day before, two. So that's a challenge. The second challenge is that there isn't enough programming inside of prison. So there's 28 prisons. There's programming in 8 prisons. So we have pending 20 prisons.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, those 20 prisons are in Southern Illinois, most of them. It's education deserts. If you think about an instructor doing 10 times the amount of work to provide education on the inside, mm-hmm. it will be inhumane to ask an instructor, travel 6 hours, build your curriculum plan, do what you have to do, but at the 10th potential. And so it's really looking at alternatives and from a creative lens, tapping into some of those colleges that are nearby to perhaps cross-collaborate to be able to mitigate that challenge. IDOC has staffing issues too, and that creates a challenge for instructors coming in. Oftentimes, an instructor may be halfway on their way to a prison that's further away, and they're not aware that they can't come in. And so what does it look like to enhance our communication channels? We've gained momentum with IDOC. Mm-hmm. Through our quarterly meetings, we raise the challenges, we raise the concerns, and we raise potential alternatives. But this is a huge step with Stateville. It's almost as if that accolade of university buildings is closing down and now what's going to happen? Mm-hmm. We're going to have a critical conversation again. And I'm curious to see where the conversation is going to lead. Just to be able to know what's going to happen. I think that's what everybody wants to know.
Again, it's the uncertainty. Yeah. And anything to add, Phyllis, just as far as how it's possible to adapt your programming at a time like this?
We're in the middle of figuring that out, especially
at Governor State.
Or
at your Stateville class?
At the Stateville class. Mm-hmm. We're really exploring how do you finish out, what's next, and and how do we support those who are still there, who are in the middle of an unknown, while they have incurred the loss of their inmate colleagues.
Yeah.
Of sort. It is a community. It is, I know that people think about people being in prison, you're there to be punished. These men don't mind serving their time. They're doing their time. What they do care about is that someone sees their humanity.
So we're almost out of time, but I'd love to hear from all three of you briefly. I mean, you're all working together to build a more liberated and a more connected world. What's guiding you? What's keeping you going right now? And it's a turbulent time. You first, Alice.
I think it's that our students actually keep us going. And I think that their humanity and the dignity that they've shown over these past years, but really also this past month when their lives have been so filled with the unknown, has been really remarkable and a testament to who they are. And so one thing I also like to bring into this conversation is that beyond thinking about how do we organize our classes at a prison that's further away, mm-hmm. which we will be doing and we absolutely are committed to doing, is so many of the students I know have, they've been in their 20, 30, 40 years already, right? They are transformed people. I believe without a doubt that they deserve to be home, and we need to be working towards more pathways for release so more people can come home. And I think that that's a critical part of the of what needs to be part of this conversation.
Yeah. What keeps you going, Phyllis?
Well, I'm just soaking in everything she's saying right about now. I'm like, yes. They have prepared to come home, right? Whenever that is. And they're not the same people. What keeps me going, I've been teaching since 2008, training social workers. I have never had this has been the most transformative experience of my life, teaching in prison. It grounds you, it lets you know, and it reminds us what really matters in this world. These men are serious. This has been by far the most outstanding class I've ever taught in.
It makes you emotional.
It beyond emotional. It grounds you into what really matters in this world and how we treat each other and also how we show up. And to see men who are hungry for education and wanting to test that education, not only on the outside, they want to test it on the inside too. They definitely want freedom, but they also realize the liberation of education and how that has freed and taken them to another level they could never imagine. And that creates a safer environment for everyone.
Give us a brief last word, Floor.
Of course. A second opportunity. I've been working with youth who are now unfortunately into the prison system, and I think of the 2,900 individuals inside. I think about that person who has been waiting 25 years for a program. I think about that person who's in a wheelchair that looks at education as a transformative method, but also as an opportunity for hope to be able to see their family members, hopefully one day. And so, again, the 29,000 individuals are in my purview to be able to advocate for more policies and access to education.
We'll leave it there. That's Flora Esquivel, who's Administrative Director for the Illinois Coalition for Higher Education in Prison. Alice Kim, who's Director of Practice for the Center for the Study of Race, Politics, and Culture at the University of Chicago. And Phyllis West, who's Director of the Social Justice Initiative at Governor State University. Thank you all so much.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced by Ellie Gilbert Bear. It was mixed by Ari Mejia and edited by Dan Tucker. Reset pairs nuance and breaking news. Now, if this sounds like what you're looking for, make sure to check out our full archive of conversations at wbez.org/reset. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you later.
I love how WBEZ shows different sides of the story. I never feel like it's too polarized, and I think the reporters do an excellent job of trying to get the full story, trying to show different other sides. I'm often, when I'm listening to public radio, think in my mind, well, what about X? Or like, I have another question. Or like, have they thought about X? And most of the time, WBEZ thinks about all of it, which I really appreciate.